The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and welcome back on a Friday night. And back home, speaking of back, is Harry Cooper of SharkHunters.com. Shark Hunters is an extraordinary organization founded by Harry, operated by Harry. He is the heart and soul of it. And he's with us tonight, just back from Europe. And I mean, just barely returned, as in the last, well, I don't know how many hours, we're going to find out in just a minute. Are you there, Harry?
Yeah, good evening, Jeff.
You've been back so soon you don't have time for jet lag, right?
Well, not yet. As a matter of fact, the engine in a rental car I used to get back from the airport is still hot.
Say that again?
I say the engine in a rental car I used to get back from the airport, it's still hot. So I only got back maybe half an hour ago.
Wow. All right. So Harry went on one of the Shark Hunters patrols. And I don't know how many were in your group or what you did there, but we're going to find out. Actually, he has taken, as always, hundreds of digital photographs. No time to put them up for you yet, but let me draw your attention to the center column at rents.com. Look for Harry Cooper. There are some extraordinary stories to look at, some wonderful pictures to look at, and you can enjoy them anytime you'd like. Of course, you can also go to Shark Hunters. And there are, how many tours do you have there, Harry?
Oh, man. Several a year dating back to 1987. So it's a bunch. When they go to the site, sharkhunters.com, click on previous tours, and then scan down and see which one you want to look at. Some of them are going over to Europe to meet veterans and, such as the one we just did and participate in the memorial they had to all the fallen soldiers, and,
yes,
and you have to go by invitation, and of course we are the guest of honor over there. Others, as you know, down to Argentina and Brazil, have to do with finding more and more proof that Adolf Hitler did not die in the bunker, but died down in Argentina, after the end of the war.
Yeah, just for our listeners who may be new to sharkhunters.com and the work you do. The programs we have done about Hitler and Eva Braun being forcibly drugged by Martin Bormann and removed from the bunker and somehow extricated from Berlin, which was just in tatters and in flames and being pounded by artillery almost around the clock by the Russian hordes who had surrounded most of the city, is an amazing story. And we did that on this program. We've covered it a couple times, but you can go in the archives and look and listen and look at the pictures. You can see the big estate built by the Mercedes family for obviously someone very important and hear the whole story about this enormous lake at Bariloche. And there was a finger on that lake. At the end of that finger, which was heavily wooded right down to the waterline, was this opening, a beautiful clearing, an enormous Bavarian-looking structure, a home, as it were, with guest houses, the works. And what amazed me was the guy who took you back there on the boat. Tell us that story again. That's really a kick.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy. We had to hire, this was in 2009, we had 10 people in our group, and we had to hire a couple of small cabin cruisers to bring us there because you can't get there by road, you have to go by boat, and we beached the two cabin cruisers on the sand.
Just roll them right up there.
Uh-huh. Yep, just beach them on the sand, and we had to walk about 100, 150 feet, I guess, over a very nice lawn, which you can see on those photos, to the estate house. And as we're going there, this one boat captain, who was, I'm guessing, about 60 years old, he starts goose-stepping with his right arm up in the air and his left index finger under his nose like a little mustache. And I said, what the heck are you doing? And he said, I know who lived here. And I said, how do you know that? And he said, my father was the caretaker, and I grew up here.
Wow.
And I know who lived here. He didn't say the name, but he was goose-stepping with his right arm in the air.
That was right on the lawn as you approached the house?
Yeah.
Wow, that must have just given you great pause for thought. That's an amazing thing.
Right. And, well, there were so many there. What's his name? The Erich Priebke.
Yeah.
He was a captain in the Waffen-SS.
Uh-huh.
And he's right now in life sentence to prison in Rome, house arrest. And he lived there. He was the head of the German school in that little town. He was also the head of the German association.
Uh-huh.
So it was going on.
Yeah.
And, they used to have parties there on the 20th of April every year because there were tons of SS officers down there.
Do you
there.
Think, Harry, that during the time that Hitler was alive down there until the year about 63, 64, at two different locations, he did live at the estate on the island, off the end of a finger at that enormous lake at Bariloche. Do you think that at any time during the 10 years he lived there or when he was up north in Cordoba to the end of his life, did he ever made an appearance at an event that was held by SS and former German high officials who were living down there? Do you think he ever did that? That's something that's always intrigued me.
Yeah, it's a good point. I have no evidence that he did. My guess is he probably did, but right now it's only a guess and we haven't nailed it down yet. We're going back in this January and talk to more people down there that knew everybody, and we'll see what more we can
I would
figure.
I would just give almost anything to be able to go on that trip.
All it takes is money. Come with us.
Yeah, I'd love it. Money and time. Do you have any room left for that trip?
Oh, yeah, we do. I just got home an hour and a half ago at the most, and I really don't know what's in the mail, but I'm sure we still have room left. It's going to be a small group, maximum 10, and we may be having a History Channel film crew with us. There are some producers I'm working with are bending their ear.
Yeah.
So we'll find out. I'll know more in the next day or two.
Now, just for our folks, again, who are new, we have covered this story extensively. And when you see the estate house there, built again by the Mercedes family during the early war years for obvious use by someone of great importance, it's really hard to deny the story that Harry Cooper has presented. He was the man to put it together first.
Yeah, about 20 years ago almost.
That's right. Yeah, almost 20 years ago with Don Angel, right?
Yeah, Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco, the Spanish spy working for the SS intelligence.
Who was in the bunker, ladies and gentlemen, in the bunker. So that's where the story originated. Now, looking at that house, every time I look at that house, I just have I don't know if the word is eerie, but it kind of just makes you feel real strange. Because you know something happened there, and you see the inside and that enormous table that hasn't moved since the occupants were there. It's an enormous wooden slab table. The house probably hasn't changed appreciably at all. It's on the market now for $40 million.
Yeah, $40 million Yankee dollars. And it entails a lot of property and various other outbuildings, a couple guest houses, which was all described by Don Angel in our book, Escape from the Bunker. That was the letter he wrote to us that was 114 pages long, single-spaced, typewritten. We just put that into a book, and we added photos, and we also added quite a few documents that we got from the FBI. And there's no theory anymore that the doggone FBI document dated 1945 flat-out state they knew where he was, And we also have some OSS documents, too, but there are FBI documents that state exactly where they knew he was in Spain prior to his jumping off down to Argentina, and they also down in Argentina. So those documents are reprinted in our book, Escape from the Bunker. So you know, when people say, well, is that your theory? It's not my theory. Is it my theory that that up is up and down is down? It's fact. It's flat-out fact.
Okay, folks, there you go. And you won't hear this on the Zionist-controlled MSM. The mainstream media wants nothing to do with this story. But you can get the book from sharkhunters.com, Escape from the Bunker. It's all there. You can listen to our presentations and look at the photographs yourselves anytime you'd like. Okay, hold on. Be right back with Mr. Harry Cooper in just a couple of minutes. Talking to our friend Harry Cooper, and we do so every month, covering various things. So the trip to Germany, am I correct that you shortened it a bit?
No. I shortened my own presence over there. The tour was, the patrol was 2 weeks, and we finished 2 weeks, and I was personally going to stay one more week. But no, the tour came off fine. I'll tell you about that if you like. Also, when I got home, I found there's a big pile of stuff from our number one agent, Pizarro, with charts, et cetera, of where the last Ju-390 landed. They made Germany built three of these huge monsters, six-engine planes that could fly, I think it was 12,500-mile range. And two of them were found by the Allies. One had been destroyed by the Germans, but they found the remains. But the second one, they got V1, they were named V1, V2, V3. It had nothing to do with the missiles. They found V1 and V3, but they never found V2. They took the props off of V1, put them onto V2, and we, thanks to what we got from Pizarro, we know where they landed. In Uruguay, just, you know, which is right across the river from Buenos Aires, and it was immediately broken up into pieces and dumped. We don't know where. I'm guessing maybe a lot of it into the river that was right there, but we don't know. We want to get another expedition down there to look for that, but that's another thing. But what was it carrying? Pizarro tells us it was carrying the bell.
Oh, really?
Yep, the bell. So we're going to dig into that even further. We've been working with the...
You better tell our listeners what the bell is.
Okay, I'm not an expert on the bell. There's a guy named Igor Witkowski, really was. But it was, if I understand it correctly, it was an ultra-high-speed centrifuge using something called Zerum, X-E-R-U-M, Zerum 525, which I think was, I'm not an expert on the bell, but was time travel, I guess. But I'm not absolutely certain on that. But we know the bell existed, and it had been in Thuringian province, but had been snuck out on board this Ju-390 and wound up down in Brazil. And I haven't had a chance to contact Witkowski yet. I'll be doing that tomorrow.
Yes.
And Dr. Joe Farrell also is somewhat of an expert on the bell, but Witkowski is the real expert.
Yes. Also known as Die Glock.
Die Glock, yeah,
which
that's the
means,
German, yeah, the German yeah. word for the bell.
Yeah. Was a purported, this is Wikipedia, top secret German scientific technological device, a secret weapon or a Wunderwaffe.
Yep, one of the Wunderwaffe.
First described by a Polish journalist and author, Igor Witkowski, in Pravda.
Yeah, Pravda.
The year 2000.
Truth.
Yeah. It was later popularized by military journalist and co-author Nick Cook, as well as by writers such as Joe Farrell, Jeremy Robinson, Farrell and others associated with Nazi occultism and anti-gravity or free energy research. Clearly, it was involved with that kind of work. It was said that it may have been, in fact, something that could fly with anti-gravity somehow being manifested. My guest this third hour tonight is former NASA shuttle space scientist and engineer Clark McClelland, who knows a lot about Die Glock.
Good.
And he knows and knew all the top German scientists who came over here via paperclip after the war and ended up taking us into space. They were, of course, the heart and soul of the American Space Project.
Yep.
He knew them all, from von Braun right on down the list. And in the third hour tonight, I'm going to get him to talk more about de Glock. If you're familiar with the Pennsylvania UFO crash landing, in the early 70s, I believe it was, Clark claims it was a de Glock flying around, and it landed there. The military was all over it. Whatever it was put on a flatbed lowboy, covered up with tarps, and removed immediately. So that's quite a story. It was called the Kecksburg UFO crash.
Okay.
But, Clark claims it was one of the de Glocks.
Yeah, Pizarro tells me that he thinks the U.S. Reverse engineered de Glock and made a bigger one, and then the original one, they reverse engineered it out in Area 51. Right now, we don't have any nail down on that, but that's
right.
What Pizarro says.
This particular, the Kecksburg UFO crash is one of the most intriguing of all. There have been at least two documentaries made on it, and if you get a chance, you can probably find them in YouTube. The object was tracked by radar by the Canadian Air Defense and NORAD as it came across Canada, maneuvered its way, flew, changing course, over the northern tier of states, and ended up landing in a little gully in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And
wow.
The people who were first on the scene said it had it looked like an acorn, and it had symbols on it. They didn't recognize them, but the military was right on it and cordoned the area off, as they always do, and got it out of there. So, you know, who knows? I don't know.
Well, and the guy who was in charge of all the secret projects, you know, was SS General Kammler, Hans Kammler, who was the third most powerful guy in the Reich, and he's the biggest mystery, I think, because there's three different theories, and probably a fourth one that's the truth. But one theory was that when Germany surrendered, he walked off into the woods and shot himself. Another theory
that's the very convenient thing to circulate,
Another one is that his SS guard took him into the woods and shot him, and then shot his adjutant. Well, you know, that doesn't make sense either. And the third one was that he made it down to South America. And there's almost no pictures of him. I've only seen two pictures of Kammler. And he was a doctor of engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And we have finally found his son. That's in the bundle from Pizarro also.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So his son is still alive and well?
Yep.
And he's down there?
I didn't say that.
I didn't either.
and
I didn't say anything about videotaping him or interviewing him and getting him committed to history.
We'll see what happens.
I didn't even ask you if he knew anything about what his dad did.
I don't know if he did, but he's about 89 now, 90 years old, so
all right.
Who knows?
All right, well, this is fascinating, and wow, if you just do a search for Hans Kammler, very interesting material comes up.
Yeah.
General Dr. Hans Friedrich Karl Franz Kammler was an engineer, high-ranking officer of the SS, and probable member blah, blah, blah. He oversaw SS construction projects and toward the end of World War II was put in charge of the V-2 missile program. Okay.
The B-1, the V-2, also the intercontinental missile, the A-9 and 10, A-9/A-10,
right.
The Type 21 submarines, the jet fighters, the rocket fighters, they all came under him. And his headquarters was the Skoda plant in, where the heck was the Skoda plant?
Sweden?
Prague.
Czechoslovakia, of course.
Yeah. And they used to make little cars.
Crappy cars, the Skoda.
Yeah, they make really nice cars now. We rented one while we were in Germany. It's a darn nice car. Probably subsidized by Obama and his stimulus, who knows.
Who knows?
All right. I had to get a zinger in for Obama.
Yeah, well, you be my guest anytime. Stand by, Harry. We'll come right back.
Roger.
Okay, back with Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Do stop by there. It is a historical treasury of material. Just incredible stuff. Better than stuff, of course, but just amazing amounts of historical artifacts, books, DVDs, signed pictures, signed by some of the most heroic people of our lifetime and before.
Yep.
And after.
Yep.
Speaking of Hans Kalmar, I'm going to ask Clark McClelland.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you would pass on my email address.
I'm going to connect you. No, I'm going to connect you. He lives down there.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, he's right in Florida.
Okay.
He is not in good health.
Oh,
he has diabetes. He's got, I think, 13 lesions of MRSA on his one leg, and I've been trying to help him. And he said at last email just today that he thinks what I've been able to help him with is beginning to work to start to heal those. But he will talk to you. He knew all of them over here, Harry, all of them.
All right. And we have contact with Witkowski and Farrell.
Okay. So if you're able to listen to the third hour tonight,
I'll get it on reruns. I'll be looking at the inside of my eyelids about 5 minutes after I say goodbye to your.
All right, you're doing great. I will get you his his private phone number.
All right, yeah, later on you can email or whatever.
I'll get it to you.
Let me throw this in if I can, and we'll talk a little about the patrol I just came back from, if that's okay. And if your listeners want to join us on any of these patrols, all they have to do is send me an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net and tell me they want the updates, and we'll send it to them. And if I may, do you want to hear about this tour?
I certainly would. Let me read just a little bit about Kalmar here that I found.
Good.
To give the listeners an idea of how these things are twisted around, and you just never know. It's such a Byzantine labyrinth of misinformation, disinformation, fiction.
Labyrinth. I like it.
Yeah. Well, you're such a great detective on this stuff. That's because you go there and you find and you talk to the people who were there and who have talked to the people in question. All right.
Right.
It's been suggested that Kalmar obtained the crystal of Zon Meza Malek and used it to gain the knowledge with which he built the Nazi bell, or Die Glock, from the tablets guarded by Ubo Sathya. This was some sort of anti-gravity device, or possibly summoned and bound, da-da-da-da-da. It goes on from there, but it says he fled to Antarctica or Argentina after the war, either by air or submarine, where he continued his research under the guise of an Argentinian nuclear fusion program and attempted to gain further access to the material from which he designed and built the Glock. He was presumably killed by Operation High Jump. Now, that's ludicrous.
Yeah.
Admiral Byrd and High Jump, they went down there, and whatever happened to them, they got their butts kicked, and they left.
Yeah, they left in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah, and they took a task force down there. I think many of you know the story.
Yeah.
You're coming up on another tour to Argentina. I want to underscore this, and if you folks,
right,
the only room for 10, want to go down there and see the home that Hitler and Eva Braun lived in and hear the story and much, much more. This is an incredible opportunity. So sharkhunters.com, you can find all the information there. Okay, go ahead and tell us what happened in Germany.
Okay, just a quick flash first. You mentioned cold fusion. We found the remains of that laboratory, you know, island on that lake, and there's pictures of that on the website. They just go to sharkhunters.com, previous tours, and go to Argentina there. Okay, our tour here, our patrol.
Kalmar could have been there.
I think it's a good possibility. Heck, when we go down there this time, we're not only going to see the home of where Uncle Adi lived, but also some of the top pilots of the Luftwaffe went down there. Rudel, probably the greatest pilot of all, and Adolf Galland and Werner Baumbach went down there to rebuild the Argentine Air Force. We'll be seeing their homes and homes of Mengele and Bormann, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you know, did I tell you my little quick story about Galland?
What?
Adolph Galland was coming to speak in Long Beach at one point, and I had a chance to go. I couldn't make it. It broke my heart. I wanted to go. It's a piece of history.
Yeah.
Adolph Galland was the general of all the German fighter forces in the war. A brilliant man, a great aviator, pilot, heroic, and all the rest of it. He had painted on the side of his Messerschmitt a picture of Mickey Mouse. He loved Walt Disney's Mickey Mouse cartoons.
With a cigar. His Mickey had a cigar.
That's right. And I sent to Mrs. Galland several VHS tapes of Walt Disney's earliest Mickey Mouse color cartoons.
Yeah.
And she wrote back and said he loved them, and to thank me, he wanted to thank me very, very much for that.
Just yeah, he was a member of Shark Hunters until he died on the operating table, actually. Anyhow, our patrol to our Southern Patrol, we call it, is our signature one, and we're going to do it again next year. We went to Nuremberg, and where the party rally was, and there's the big stadium, of course, where Hitler stood, made his speeches, and we go there, of course. Anybody can go there.
Yeah.
However,
that was Leni Riefenstahl's A Triumph of the Will movie.
You
in
betcha.
That stadium.
She was a member of Shark Hunters until she died.
Was she?
Yeah, 1 week after her 101st birthday. We corresponded a lot, but I never got to meet her, because every time I'd go to Munich and ask to have coffee with her, she'd be up mountain climbing or diving in the Red Sea. She was a tough cookie.
Yeah.
Gorgeous woman. And she not only did Triumph of the Will there, she also did two other party rallies prior to that. And we have those DVDs for sale, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, you see the big stadium where Hitler stood, but nobody bothers to wonder what's inside that stadium. And there's a big sign, Eingang verboten, which, you know, means shark hunters are welcome here. Inside there is the what they call a golden room. It's a huge, big hall where Hitler used to have receptions before he'd appear out there through the door at the top, which only Hitler could use.
I see.
And the ceiling is still all inlaid with the gold mosaics, including gold swastikas. We go in there because one of our members is the mayor's advisor. He's got the keys to everything.
But the public can't go in there.
That's correct. That's correct. And we went up to Hitler's suite of offices, which is nothing but just empty cinder block rooms now, and all the way up to the door, which only Hitler was allowed to use, and nobody can use it now because it's welded shut. But we go there. Then there are huge, big bunkers underneath the city, which most people in Nuremberg don't even know about. To get there, there's just a little shacky looking building on a street with posters of an Elvis impersonator, and you got to peel back one corner of the poster, and there's the keyhole, and you turn the key in there, and you go in, and the first one was a small one, had room for 6,000 to escape the bombing, and another one, the bigger one, and nobody else goes in. Nobody else even knows it's there. And we went all through that with our friend who's the mayor's advisor. Then we have lunch at what's called Hitler's train station. It's the railroad station where he would get off the train behind the big stadium, and it's turned into a restaurant, and it looks like a 1930s type rail station with suitcases all up on the shelves and stuff, and really, really good food, and I'm told really good beer.
You never touch the stuff.
No, I'm not a very good Irishman. I don't like beer. My Irish granddad probably turns over in his grave every time I go to Germany because I just don't drink beer. I think I had 3 beers this last 2 weeks, which is more than I usually have in a couple of years. So, but then from there, we also have a dinner in a restaurant which serves a special Nuremberg sausage, and that restaurant has been in operation. It started operation 90 years before Christopher Columbus left for the New World.
Incredible.
It started in like 1419 or something like that. Then we drive
still,
down.
It's still.
Yeah, and boy, you better watch how you walk through there. Stay stooped over, or you're going to crack your head, because the average person was about 5 foot back in those days.
Yeah.
Then we drive down to Austria, and we pass within a few hundred yards of the castle that was used in the movie Where Eagles Dare. But it's privately owned. You can't go there. We just pull off. Everybody takes pictures. Then we get down into southern Austria, where they have an annual memorial where all of any veterans, you know, they come together and they have evening fellowships where, you know, a lot of beer,
yeah,
a lot of food, a lot of singing. And then we were invited to the headquarters of a clubhouse, whatever, of one of the groups there. And they made me kind of an honorary member, gave me a plaque. Then we have the big meeting, which is Sunday, the Ulrichsberg Memorial, where they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform they were wearing. And they have most of the vets are Waffen-SS. Very few Luftwaffe left, very few U-boat guys left, not so many Army. They have a whole group from the Flame of Flanders Division. A good friend of mine over there, Paul Roche, just turned 94 years old. I can't even keep up with him. This old guy is just 100 miles an hour. He was a tank commander. And everybody loves to see the Shark Hunters there, because we're there to honor the memories of everyone who fell, no matter what uniform they wore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big thing. We also have a cruise on a big, beautiful lake there. We also visit a castle. But the big thing, of course, is meeting with all those veterans. And we go into the town of Klagenfurt, which is the capital city of Carinthia. And there's a giant stone dragon in the town square. And they tell us that at one time this dragon was real, and it roamed all of Europe back in the 1500s, but it could only eat virgins. And when it got to Klagenfurt, the poor thing just starved to death. So
that's funny.
Yeah, that's the story, and it's in stone now. And there are other things we do in there, too, but the biggest thing is we participate in the in the memorial service. Then we go up to Berchtesgaden, where we visit the Eagle's Nest, and we sail on the Königssee. But we also go to historic places like where Hitler's home had stood, and for the hardy ones, we hike to some of the bunkers that most people don't even know about.
Yeah,
but that's coming up again next September. Your listeners can just send us a note at sharkhunters@earthlink.net and say they want information on all the tours we're doing. You know,
no obligation.
No obligation. That's the word.
Sure.
My mind ain't working, so lots of good.
No, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. You're doing great. This, when you go to Berchtesgaden, if you go up to the Eagle's Nest and just happen to have a little room in your back pocket for a little piece of the buildings that were blown up,
One of our guys was picking up bricks. When you go up to the Eagle's Nest, if you know where to look, there's still the concrete foundations for the 37 millimeter, the 20 millimeter gun.
Yeah, aircraft.
Yeah, and all under the command of Colonel Wolfgang Frank, who was a member of Shark Hunters until he passed away recently.
Wow, it'd be, what a thing to have would be a brick from that. That'd
yeah,
be
well,
amazing.
Bring your backpack.
Yes, sir. Okay, and I want to point all of you folks to the center column at rents.com to look for Harry Cooper, and you can find one. So you can listen, you can look at the pictures. Hitler's post-war time in Argentina. I'm looking at a picture of the lake at Bariloche and the guard tower, the watchtower. And there's the house. There's the approach to the house.
It was situated in such a way that if a boat was come, remember now you're thinking back to the 1945 to 55. Mm-hmm. If a boat was approaching from one direction, it had to pass that guard tower mm-hmm. where there'd be maybe a platoon of guys whose only job was to watch and radio to the house that the boat was approaching. Or if a boat was coming from the other direction, there was a small bunker, and the same thing, maybe a platoon or two of guys there, and their only job was to let the house know that somebody was coming. And from what our guy down there says, the Germans who lived there, which was a bunch of them, they had armed security both on the water and on shore uh-huh. after the war. I don't speak Spanish, but I get along okay down there using my German.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, well, you can take a look at all these pictures, and again, Harry's going back this coming winter, our time. It'll be summer down there. It'll be beautiful.
Oh, yeah, you get a sunburn down there. Buenos Aires is a really great city. It's a lot of old charm, old world charm, and a lot of modern stuff, too. And right now, their economy is a little shabby. So the Yankee dollar really packs a punch down there.
Yeah, nice. The pictures I'm looking at of the atomic laboratory, there's clearly a nuclear lab there at San Carlos de Bariloche. That was a big structure. Somebody put a lot of money into that. No doubt.
Yeah, that's correct. And we think most of it came from when Borman came down, because he had tons of money with him of all types. Mm-hmm. And he also had the code numbers for the bank accounts, and from what we've learned, he and Perón formed an alliance, and Perón went from being a colonel with no money and no land in 1945 to being a general and president of Argentina a couple years later with a ton of money. And another thing we just learned, Scorzini, the number one commando of the whole war, he went down there, and he was working with Borman to get some money from him to start the Odessa down there, which helped a lot of guys escape. And he also had time to have an affair with Evita.
Well, everyone had an affair with Evita, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she was a busy girl.
No dragons down there either.
No, okay. No, not where Evita walked, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so when you go to Germany now, how much is left to see from the war? They've preserved, I guess, little areas here and there. Are there any official recognized national monuments to the war itself there?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, Jeff. At first, after the U.S. pulled out of different places and turned it back to the government, especially in Bavaria, boy, they couldn't tear down stuff fast enough, and they tore down as much as they could. And then the German federal government passed a law saying that anything from World War II now cannot be destroyed. And the party rally grounds in Nuremberg requires about 70 million euros, which is about 90 million Yankee bucks, just to stabilize it. And who's got 70 million euros, but they're still scratching for it, but they will only preserve it in its current state, which is pretty shabby, not to renovate it. And you cannot have a memorial. It's against the law to have memorials to World War II down there.
Right.
You cannot mention the veterans or World War II.
Isn't that amazing?
You can't mention them in a good light. I belong to the American Legion, and there's guys that belong to the Legion and to the VFW, and they got a helicopter out front of their clubhouse, and they fly the flag and the MIA flag down there.
Mm-hmm.
The one I was with, they meet in a former coal bin. They can't put flags out front. They can't put a sign up. They meet quietly. Not secretly, but quietly. They can't make any big whoop-de-doo about themselves. Pretty sad. Pretty sad.
When some of the Luftwaffe aces pass on, I guess, they still do flyovers for some of them, I understand. the German
Air
Force.
Right, and they named some of the ships for some of the heroes. They named a destroyer after Rommel. But the guys from the SS, who often SS, no, that was deemed a criminal organization because they lumped all the SS together. And I'm not saying any of the SS was criminal, but the Waffen SS, they were just combat soldiers, and probably the best of any.
No doubt.
Any of the Americans I've talked to that fought against the Waffen SS said they were the toughest guys they ever fought. They just never quit.
Right, and they were brilliant on top of it.
Yeah, they had great, great generals. They had, everything was top of the mark with them. But they had just a whole lot more of the Allies and a whole lot more. Well, for instance, this big Ju-390 airplane, they had three of them. How many big airplanes did we build? Three an hour, So American productivity, the number of the American people, boots on the ground, plus the Soviets, Uncle Joe didn't mind sacrificing people hand over fist.
Right. That's how the Soviets defeated Germany. The Germans literally could not kill them, as crude as this sounds, fast enough.
Right.
And they had commissars standing behind these human waves, and if any of the men balked, they were shot in the back.
Yeah.
And they just kept running, and they'd fall. Their comrades would climb over them. They'd fall, and there'd be just 10, 20 feet of bodies in places.
Yep.
And the German machine guns were actually melting down.
Yeah.
That's how Stalin fought the war. Human life meant nothing to that guy. Some of the estimates of those killed under Bolshevik, Zionist, Jewish Russia range up to 100 million altogether.
Wow.
So
I know he whacked all sorts of his high-ranking people.
Yeah.
I was there the first time in 91, which is still the Soviet Union, I went into the Red Army Museum with a special guide, and the girl who was taking us through, me and my special guide, who I found out later was chief of intelligence for the Soviet Navy, they showed me a whole huge wall full of 5x7 photos, hundreds of them, and the girl pointed to six and said these were the ones who were not killed in the Stalin purges. I said, are you saying, and that's all the farther I got, and she says, duh, all the rest, they were executed in the Stalin purges. Only one chief of the GRU, the Army Secret Service, Secret Intelligence, only one walked out on his own. All the rest got when it was time, they got shot in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
Igor, bring him up. Comrade director has bled on floor. Bring in replacement. Do not pay attention to that dead man. You are taking his place.
Until your time is up.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I don't think it was a really.
They had a high, very high turnover.
Yeah. So he killed all his professional military, and he had a huge, huge military. But their navy was bottled up in Kronstadt and Vladivostok because they were afraid to go out. Only the human waves. They had some fighter pilots who were really super. They had some fighter pilots that would fly over to German airdromes and dare them to come up.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The whole story is incredible.
Yeah. We're trying to dig out all the real history that we can dig out.
Yeah. Very good. Well, I salute you, sir. Thank you for being on the program as always, my friend. You get some sleep now, and we'll talk again very soon. I'll send you the Clark McClellan material as well, so you get on that, and I'll
Look forward to talking to him, and you can check our website in about 3 days. I'll have all the photos up from this patrol, but like I say, we got about 700 high-res photos I have to go through and edit, cut down, and paste, and
I understand.
Sprinkle holy water and all that on them.
All right, Harry. Get some sleep. Take care.
All right. Good talking to you, Jeff.
Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Harry Cooper, SharkHunters.com. Just an extraordinary website, extraordinary people, real history, and we'll be back.